Hey, everybody. I hope you had an amazing holiday season. I certainly did. I got a chance to spend time with my family and see some friends and, of course, open lots and lots of presents. And I did give some, too. So, unfortunately, I have some good news and some bad news. The bad news first. Sadly, we live in a time where we have to be extra safe and cautious of whom we come encounter with. Today's episode is a little behind schedule because my production team caught COVID and was out of commission for a few weeks. Now, the good news is everyone is better and we're back up and running. We have some exciting guests lined up for 2022 that are going to come on and help you achieve all your athletic goals. So remember, when training, practicing, or playing, to always wear your mask, socially distance when possible, and wash your hands. And if you are so inclined, get vaccinated. Safety is always a priority. The new year brings on a new season. And when there's a new season, there are new goals. What's your field goals? Now, on to today's show.
Today's show is brought to you by LMH Strategies, Inc., a leadership, management, and human systems consulting company.
College football is a business, even at the lower levels. So when it gets to the point of business, you kind of follow the money, you know, and schools will start to show you if they're really interested because they're going to put money on the table. Now, there's a process to get to the money. You have to first and foremost catch their attention where they're aware of you. Then you're going to have to kill it in the evaluation process, you know, athletically and academically. If you can get in front of them as many times as possible, that is highly, highly favorable.
Welcome to Field Goals for the Focus Driven Athlete, hosted by Glenn Hames, where we share tips and strategies that help amateur athletes, coaches, and teams achieve their on- and off-the-field athletic goals. Our show discusses topics important to the elite amateur athlete. Whether you play football, basketball, soccer, or any other active sport, either on the field or court, our experienced industry experts, coaches, and former professional athletes will provide firsthand insight on topics that will give athletes who desire to play sports at the highest level an edge over their competition, and undoubtedly will help turn their athletic goals into a reality. When there's a new season, there are new goals. What's your field goals? It's the sport of kings, better than diamond rings. That's why we're here to sing football. Sundays in the snow, referees' whistles blow, Warriors toe-to-toe, football. Now, for all those that may be unfamiliar with that tune, that's a 1986 throwback by LL Cool J from the football movie Wildcats, starring Goldie Hawn and a young Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson. The movie was about a woman who was thrusted into a head coaching role of an inner-city high school football team who, despite facing many trials and tribulations as one could possibly imagine, goes on to win the city championship. Now, the sport of football has come a long way since then. Currently, college football is a $4 billion business, making it the number one sport with more full-ride athletic scholarships than any other collegiate sport. Playing college football is the dream of thousands of athletes across the country. But realistically, only about 1% or 1 out of every 92 senior high school football players will get a full scholarship to play at the highest level in the NCAA FBS. In fact, the NCAA reports that only about 7% of high school football players will compete at the college level, and approximately 3% will play Division I ball. For those families that are lucky to be one of the fortunate, many are unaware of how to get their sons recruited, as the recruiting process for high school football players is a tremendous undertaking. Now, for most high school athletes and families, going through the process of identifying the right football college, getting a coach to take notice, and making the best choice on a school can be very overwhelming. By the numbers alone, there are less than 900 college football teams in America and more than 80,000 players on a roster currently playing college football. On average, each NCAA FBS member school has about 22 full athletic scholarships per year for a prospective student athlete. Each FBS school cannot have more than 85 full scholarship players at the same time. with only around 2.5% of high schoolers ever getting on a Division I team and around 0.5% of those becoming starters, those good enough to make college teams are generally in an exclusive league of their own. Although the football recruiting process sometimes involves talented athletes being sought out by college football coaches and recruiters from high-profile programs, oftentimes it involves a concerted effort on the part of the athletes, their families, and their high school coaches. More often than not, high school coaches are probably most responsible for more college football commits than all college football recruiting personnel combined. Consequently, the simple truth about football recruiting is that only the absolute top athletes who have standout abilities are likely to be selected by football recruiters. However, for student athletes who are confident that they have what it takes to be recruited, there are several ways they can maximize their chances of fulfilling their goal to play college football at one of their desired schools. Coming up next on the Field Goals for the Focus Driven Athlete podcast, I get to speak with former University of Colorado football standout, Coach Terrence Wood, founder and CEO of Before You Go Pro, an organization that is dedicated to helping talented student athletes navigate the often difficult college football recruitment process. Welcome back to another episode of Field Goals for the Focus Driven Athlete. Joining me on the field today is former University of Colorado defensive back, author, and entrepreneur, Coach Terrence Wood. Terrence, what's up, bro?
How's it going, Glenn?
Hey, man, it's going great, man. Happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays to you, and so excited that you invited me for the podcast today. Amazing job that you've been doing, and looking forward to giving any feedback we can give.
Absolutely, man. Appreciate you having you on. So before we even get started, I just have one question for you. Where were you 5 years ago when I was going through the recruiting process for my son?
You know, I that's not the first time, Glenn, that I've gotten that question. And, you know, I asked myself, where was I? And Before You Go Pro, when I was going through it myself, you know, that's what we've tried to do, is just create what was missing for so many parents and athletes that are going through the recruiting process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely could have used your services during that time. So I absolutely love what you're doing for amateur athletes playing the sport of football. And I'm not sure if you knew or not, but honestly, I've been personally following you and Before You Go Pro for well over a year now. In fact, before I even started this podcast and when Field Goals finally launched, it was always the goal to have you on as a guest. And here we are. So, you know, I'm excited. I've been a longtime fan and I'm super excited to have you join us on the show.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Glenn. And yeah, we've been at it for a while, me and my team, and just so excited to share with your audience. And you never know who's listening or watching a video. So just glad that we've brought value to you.
Absolutely. So with the college football season coming to a close and the recruiting season being in full swing, you know, what better time than now to talk about the recruiting process for high school football players, since so many of them are going through the process right now? So, you know, what we're both doing wasn't available when we were in high school. And can you imagine if we had access to this type of information when we were in school?
Oh, man. You know, I was thinking earlier today on some of the key things that you need for success, and information is definitely one of them. You could have all the talent in the world, but if you don't know certain timelines, deadlines, if you don't know the route to take, then chances are you're not going to get what you want. So, yeah, the information is key. So many athletes, Glenn, have what it takes, maybe academically or athletically, to get to the next level, but they just don't know the steps. So, you know, that's what we want to do, is provide them the motivation. Well, they have to bring their own motivation, but the inspiration and also the steps to get what they want.
Right, right, right. So, Terrence, you being a former football player yourself, there's the whistle, and I know you know what that means. When the whistle blows, it's officially time to take the field. So you ready to take the field?
Let's take the field, brother.
All right, all right. So look, you and I both know that many young men in high school want to play football at the next level in college, and even more so, they want to play Division I, and Division I is where the big boys play.
Yeah.
there are always three questions I ask prospective student athletes that want to play Division I ball. One, why do you want to play D1? Two, who do you want to play for? And three, are you any good? And I always ask the first two questions because I'm genuinely interested in hearing what they are going to say. And it might sound funny that I'm asking how good they are, and you would think that would be a given that a player is good if they say they want to play D1, but it's not always the case, is it?
No, it's not always the case. You know, I mean, we could be someone who wants to be a Grammy Award singer, musician, you know, but that doesn't mean we have the chops, or we may want to be the next Denzel Washington, but you might not be able to act like him. So there are dreams, and then there's realities. And the beautiful thing about college football is that there's many different levels that you can play at. So you don't have to be, you know, the next coming of Charles Woodson or Deion Sanders to play college football. You can play at one of the lower levels and still get a great education, maybe even go to college debt-free and start building your future. So yes, you know, everybody wants to play at the highest levels, and there are some that just don't have the talent, but there are many who do and just don't know the steps.
Yeah, I agree. You know, because it's one thing to think that you're pretty good. It's a whole other thing to show you actually are good. So before we even get into the recruiting process, take us through what D1, 2, and 3 schools are looking for in a football player, and how good do you actually have to be to play football at the collegiate level?
Great question, Glenn. And first and foremost, we have to keep in mind as student athletes that these are our institutions, you know, institutions of higher learning. So even though you may be able to tote the rock or kick off out of the end zone, you have to be an upstanding citizen on these multi-million dollar campuses, in some cases, probably $1 billion campuses. So, you know, that's what they're looking for first and foremost, is people that are going to do the right thing socially. There are academic standards that have to be met for you to receive a college football scholarship and play at a university before you get there, and even once you get there to stay on the field. And then obviously there's the athletic ability. You know, some people, Glenn, think that, like I said before, you have to be out of the world to play college football. And there are some young men who are out of the world. You know, they're just freaks playing at Ohio State or Alabama, somewhere like that. But for the most part, you know, I think that if a young man can be a starter on his varsity high school team or on his junior college or prep school team, if maybe an all-league candidate, I think that that's probably somebody that might have the talent to play at the next level.
Yeah, one of the things that PSAs don't always take into account when they say they want to play at the next level is passing the eye test, or how they will measure up against other college football players. And that's one of the most critical pieces to getting recruited even before a coach sees any film. Just talk to us about the importance of passing the eye test and how a PSA is being compared to the average height and weight of college football players by position and division.
So the eye test is, you know, basically, people will, I mean, let's call it what it is, you guys. Just like a model walks down the runway and people have to critique the model, it's the same thing with these athletes. You know, if I'm a basketball player, I have to most likely be a certain height. If I'm a football player, I have to have a certain build where I'm not going to get killed on the field. And obviously, nobody's been killed on the field, but it's just a... You don't want to get crushed, basically. And then, you know, even if you are a little bit of a slighter build, you know, I wasn't the biggest guy in the world. I was playing college and professional ball at 5'10", 180, 185. But, you know, you have to be fleet of foot. You have to be fast. That's the beautiful thing about football, is that, you know, there's a little something for everybody, whether you're a kicker, offensive lineman, defensive lineman, or someone that's a specialty player, like a receiver or DB. So, You know, coaches will eyeball you because they're going to have certain standards, but standards can vary from division to division, level to level in college football. And then really, Glenn, they can also vary from team to team. An example is when I went to the University of Colorado out of high school, I was what they were looking for. If I was coming out today, I probably would get bypassed by Colorado because I'm not over 6 foot. Now they only recruit cornerbacks. That was my position, defensive back, that are over 6 foot. So each team will have their own individual preferences, and then each division will kind of have their standards. You should look at rosters. If you're a prospect, a PSA, you should go on the website of the schools that you like and look at the guys' height and size at your positions. That will give you a good indication.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I always say you got to look the part, you know, for the opportunity that you're trying to go after, because you don't want to be undersized. Because you know what? When you're being recruited out of high school, you're 18 years old. But when you get to college, you're playing against, you know, young men, 19, 21 and 22 year olds, in some cases, 23 and 24 year olds. So you got to definitely be able to look the part and be able to handle your own. I can remember when you and I were in school, and I know I have you probably, you know, a few years in age, but when we were going through the recruiting process, everything seemed to take place during our senior year and in our senior year only. Nowadays, it's much different, and you have athletes getting looks and recruited as early as ninth grade. If a prospective student athlete is wondering how to get recruited for football, they first need to understand when the recruiting process starts and the differences between when they should start the recruiting process and when they should expect to hear from college coaches. So when does the recruiting process begin for a prospective student athlete? And explain to our listeners the differences between when they should start the process and when they should expect to start hearing from college coaches.
So the recruiting process, that's almost a two-part question. In my opinion, if you want to be on the front end of the recruiting process, it really starts in eighth grade, Glenn. I think that it doesn't mean that college coaches will most likely be reaching out to you in the eighth grade, although that has happened before. You know, that's not something that hasn't happened. It definitely happens to the very, very rare few. But I think it starts from a perspective of really being strategic with the high school that you're choosing for the young man. If you already, chances are, you already know in eighth grade, seventh grade, maybe even younger for some of these young men, that they do want to play college football. Maybe they're playing Little League early and they just know that's their sport. They want to go play college football. So once you get to eighth grade, you should already have a good feel for the schools in your area that produce college level talent. Now, not everybody's in a position to choose their own school. Some kids are talented enough in high school where they get full rides to high schools nowadays, prep schools. But not every athlete is in that position. Some athletes have to go to schools that are in their neighborhood, maybe the local public school in their neighborhood. If you don't have a choice in the school you go to and the school doesn't produce a lot of college talent, then that's even more of an indicator that you need to be proactive with your own situation and really look for ways to market yourself and get more exposure. So, you know, you might not be able to go to the school that sends 10 guys every year to Division I schools, but you can do some of the things that those athletes do, especially in the off season, to get you closer to your goal. So in my opinion, it starts in eighth grade with the decision of which high school to go to. Now to that second question of when should they start to expect to be contacted by potential universities, I would say that once a young man starts playing varsity then he's a green light for people to kind of tap him on the shoulder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When can college coaches start contacting prospective student athletes? And when does college coaches stop the recruiting process?
So as far as contact, there's obviously various layers of contact. They can start sending mail, snail mail, and you know, kind of hitting the kids up on DM. They can start doing that early. But as far as literally like in the mix, calling them, offers can come early too. But really, it picks up for the average student athlete their junior year. Once they hit the spring of their junior year, things really start to pick up. So right now, the class of 2022 at the time of this recording is in the midst of the signing periods, the early and the regular period. As soon as that starts to dwindle down, if you're in the class of 2023, you should really realize that you're on the clock. Now, as far as the end of them contacting, you know, they can't contact an athlete after he's signed with a particular university. And then as far as deadlines, you know, it just depends on if a young man is going to go to maybe a junior college or a prep school. But usually they have to make a decision by the end of spring, the end of May.
OK, so let me ask you this. There are dead periods and then there are contact periods. Just briefly walk us through the differences between those two.
OK, so as far as the NCAA, they really try to make sure that they most of the times are in the best interest of the athletes and making sure that they're protected as well. So they set up different times of the year where colleges can reach out to prospects. So as far as the different periods, the contact period, the dead period, with the dead period, athletes can actually still be contacted. They just can't be on college campuses. They can't be on college campuses, and they also can't have college coaches coming out to them. But they can still receive offers. They can still be contacted through social media, different things like that. But it's just a dead period as far as face-to-face visits. Contact period is really more so for kind of the younger kids and different times of the year where they want people to have some peace. So, for example, you can't start contacting as far as literally recruiting, having face-to-face visits with kids until the spring of going into their senior year. So that's what I was talking about with these student athletes that are going to be in the class of 2023. It's not really, you'll get offers, you'll get people talking to you at camps and stuff like that, but they're not supposed to be hardcore recruiting those kids until the spring. That's when the contact period really opens up for the class of 2023. And that's when athletes can go on campuses. They can do official visits. They can do unofficial visits. During the dead period, none of that is supposed to be going on. So the players and the coaches and the parents really have to manage those different times. There's a lot of times that parents are reaching out or players are reaching out to coaches, and it's just not a time where they can get back to you.
Understood. To get recruited for football, student athletes always have to keep in mind, one, do I meet the needs of the coach? And two, will I add value to the team I want to play for? And if so, not only do they have to be extremely talented football players with good academics, but they also just have to understand how the football recruiting process works. And you and I both know, you know, when it comes down to the football recruiting process, it's a multi-year journey with many milestones along the way. So for the sake of this conversation, if an athlete is good and they pass the eye test, let's focus on the junior year and talk about what should be happening during this particular time of year in high school. So walk us through those details of what an athlete should be doing in their junior year to prepare themselves to be recruited in their senior year.
Great question. So As I said before, you know, the recruiting process is a journey and it definitely starts early. So let's say that a young man is on track thus far, that now he's playing varsity football. He has the proper grade point average. Just for your listeners, the minimum grade point average for a young man to receive an NCAA scholarship is 2.3 GPA, grade point average. And it has to be core classes. So your home ec, your PE, that doesn't go towards them being eligible for college football recruitment. The classes that are a little bit more difficult, your math, your social studies, your sciences, your foreign languages, those are the core classes. So let's say that a young man is on track with all of those things. And then now he's in his junior year of high school. With our company, we actually like to break it down by grade and semester. So we have a membership site that's a content-based platform where it goes by grade and semester, what the athletes need to have in place athletically, academically, and socially to be attractive to college football recruiters. So with that being said, what we do is when we get a young man, we look at what grade and semester he's in. Let's say he's in the first semester of his junior year. Let's say, you know, first semester, he's probably playing football. So we want him to really focus on having a dynamite junior year, because that's really the year that kind of sets his resume to be recruited. So we want him to have a dynamite junior year. At the end of his junior year, what we will do is make sure that his huddle film, his highlight film, is done properly. A lot of times, Glenn, guys will have good plays, but they will not have them in the proper order. And they'll have some of their best plays maybe later on in their film. And the recruiter has already cut off the film by the time your best play was about to come up. You know, so we make sure that their film is properly ordered. We take them through a process of finding out what type of schools might be right for them. And then we come up with what we call as a college prospects list, about 10 to 15 schools that we laser target for the athlete. We want to have a good feel, Glenn, by the summertime, so maybe towards the end of the spring, of who's really genuinely interested in this junior in high school, or this freshman who just finished up his first season in junior college, you know, or prep school, because then we want to get him on campus and in front of those coaches in the summer. So if he's a high school kid, we want to get him to, they've started now having junior college camps. Usually they just had them for the high school kids, but some schools now do have junior college camps. But we want to get him on campus in the summer with a school that's genuinely interested, where that young man can start to build up that relationship and impress them. And if everything goes right, then maybe before he even finishes his football season, his senior year, he already knows where he's going next.
And so what should families be doing to support their sons, and how should athletes and families be working with their high school coaches during this particular time?
So if a young man currently is a junior in high school, and let's say, you know, at the time of the recording of this podcast, most of these young men have finished their season. Right now we're in bowl season and most of the high school, junior college kids are done. So right now, if I was a junior, I would be making sure that that film is in a proper order. Here's a huge piece, Glenn, a huge piece that, you know, you talk about knowledge just of the process, and a lot of people miss a key part that you would think would be kind of common sense. Most young men will build a highlight film, or their parent will, and then they'll just start reaching out to schools. And really what they should do is get a film evaluation first. They need to get a film evaluation from someone that's in one of two buckets, Glenn. Someone that has played at the level of college football that they want to play at, or someone who has helped people get to the college level that they want to play at, because then that's probably a film evaluation that we can trust. It's not their cousin, you know. And then once we have that film evaluation, it's going to allow us to save time, because now we know who we should send the film to. Kind of to your point of the eye test, why are we sending film to Michigan when Michigan and just totally spending so much time on Big Ten schools, when you're probably more of a group of five type athlete or an FCS level athlete, you know, but you never got a film evaluation. So you keep going after Michigan and North Carolina, and they're never going to give you a shot when maybe your school was 40 miles down the road, you know, at an FCS school, and they would have loved to give you a full ride, but you never called them. So that's really where I would start if I was a young athlete that was coming up on my time to be on the clock, is I would get my film together, then I would let somebody evaluate the film. And that's also a key indicator, you guys, for you parents out there that are maybe looking for help with recruiting. The first thing I would do, Glenn, is get my huddle film together. Make sure it's in the proper order, get a film evaluation, and really make sure that my head coach knows that I have a strong desire to play at the next level.
Good. And for those that are now seniors, this is where the rubber meets the road in the most critical period of the recruiting process, because this is the time where athletes should start reaping the rewards of their labor. They should be receiving more letters. They should be going on more unofficial and official visits, having conversations with coaches. Everything that an athlete has done leading up to their senior year should be manifesting itself now. So tell us what the recruiting process looks like during the prospective student athlete senior year that will lead them to signing the NLI either in the early round of December or more commonly in February during National Signing Day.
Yeah, you know, as far as what the process looks like and kind of some of those key indicators, you know, college football is a business, even at the lower levels. So when it gets to the point of business, you kind of follow the money, you know, and schools will start to show you if they're really interested, because they're going to put money on the table. Now, there's a process to get to the money. You have to first and foremost catch their attention where they're aware of you. Then you're going to have to kill it in the evaluation process, you know, athletically and academically. If you can get in front of them as many times as possible, that is highly, highly favorable. Because at the end of the day, Glenn, if I'm a coach who can choose from across the country, then why choose you? I got to feel comfortable with you. I got to feel like I know what I'm going to get. And if someone has worked with you, maybe in the summer camp, if they've met you a couple times and spent some time with you on an unofficial visit, you know, then I feel like I can trust this young man. I know his family. I feel like this is a good bet on my investment, you know, so you may get the scholarship offer over someone else. So the key thing is, people can't forget it's a relationship-based industry. That's why, you know, our program is so beneficial, because we do have industry relationships, but people need to really work on focusing on not a whole bunch of schools, but a few targeted schools that are right. Start building a relationship, and then you'll be able to tell who's really interested when they start talking about the money, when they start talking about official visits, when they start talking about scholarship offers, then they're serious.
Now, you know, sometimes athletes think that they have to be a 3, 4, or 5 star athlete to get recruited. That's not necessarily the case. And just out of curiosity, can you talk about how does an athlete get a star rating?
So as far as that is the big thing, you know, every era has different things. And right now, athletes want to be rated, you know, and be a 5-star. So the ranking system, it's kind of something that started with the recruiting magazines back in the day. And then 24/7 Sports took it to a whole nother level. But 5 stars is the most that you can have. And those are your premier student athletes. And then 4-3-2-1, sometimes it's the publications that whether online or offline that find out about athletes and start to rank them. There's a number of different things that can go into it. You know, if you're on a school that is maybe a powerhouse, you know, a high school or junior college, and you start to get your name out there and make plays when you're young, then people are going to have their eye on you, and you'll probably get rated when it's your time, your senior year. You'll probably be a 3-star or something right out of the gates. If your coach has a lot of pull with the recruiting media, he may alert them to you. Obviously, big time production is going to help you get rated. Some of the camps and showcases that are real tied in to some of the media can help you. And then also, you know, like you said, at the end of the day, kind of the eyeball test. If I'm a wide receiver and I go to this showcase and I ran a 4.4 and I'm 6'3", you know, 185, 200 pounds, then you hit all the different checkpoints for somebody to be rated very highly coming out of high school.
You talked about this briefly, about what happens between in the offseason between a PSA's junior and senior year. Is that the time for them to attend these camps and showcases and junior days that will get them in front of coaches?
Yes. So really the way that we work with our athletes is that we always, if this is what you want, you got to understand that this is super competitive and we want you in front of the decision makers as much as possible. So your freshman year of high school, you know, when we get to the summertime, we want you on campus. We want you at some camps. The sophomore year, same thing. We want you on campus, building relationships. We want you on at some camps. Your junior year, Glenn, is different. Junior year has to be very, very serious and strategic. You know, if you've been going to University of Oregon camp freshman, sophomore year, and then you had a decent junior year in the fall and still no word from Oregon, then chances are you're not their cup of tea. So why go back to Oregon camp your junior year going into your senior year? That's your last summer going into your senior year when you're going to sign. So you need to go to a camp of a school that's genuinely interested in you or maybe a good fit. And that's going to come from, once again, getting a film evaluation, getting some exposure, and then getting out there and seeing who's interested.
Yeah, my son grew up in the Washington, D.C. area, and in between his junior and senior year, he was actually invited to quite a bit of showcases and camps. So, you know, he was a defensive player, so he would go to like Maryland's defensive camp or defense, big man's camp. And then he was invited to FBU in Virginia. And from there, you know, is when he started really getting noticed because, like you said, he was practicing and training in front of college coaches or recruiters and scouts. And so, you know, he started getting noticed during that time in between his junior year and his senior year in high school. So, which leads me to the next question. Are families and prospective student athletes, you know, are they at the mercy of their high school football coach helping them to get recruited? I'm always wondering, how should families work with their son's high school football coach during this particular time?
So I wouldn't say that they're at the mercy or the whim of the high school coach, but I also want the listeners to be aware that coaches can, you know, mess up some opportunities for a young man. So you always want to make sure that you're not in the doghouse. You want to be in good graces with the coaches because you never know what they're saying behind closed doors. If you're making the right moves on the field and in practice, then chances are they're going to be excited to help you with college recruiting. Now, some coaches are better with recruiting than others. And I think that sometimes families get into a little bit of a pickle when they rely on the coaches, where basically all the eggs are in the coach's basket for them to be recruited. I tell our athletes that if coach is helping, if he's making calls, if he's, you know, really got your back, then that's the cherry on top. But we just can't expect that. So, and really, Glenn, even at the schools where there's a tradition of guys going to college, don't just expect it. Because I've seen it there too. I've seen powerhouse schools. Parent, hey, got them to a powerhouse. I should have been good. Yeah, you should have been, but you see, we're not. So it's really important that you get your coach involved and then do your work as well.
Well, I ask that because, you know, a lot of times, and I saw this too when my son was getting recruited, is that there are a lot of parents that don't know what to do with the recruiting process. Hence why I wanted to start this podcast and hence why we're doing this particular episode. They're just at a loss. And I know I've been there too. So for the sake of the parents, you know, what type of questions should they be asking their high school coach if their son is being, you know, heavily sought after?
I think that they should be asking the high school coach what they feel, you know, what he feels about their son's prospects of getting to the next level. And then hopefully you can get a straight answer. But I think that it's totally feasible and totally within your right as a young man, especially if you've been doing everything right by the team, to ask, hey, coach, what do you think about me playing at the next level? And if you think I got the talent, I definitely would love to, because then you don't have to wonder. You're getting it straight from the coach on how he feels. Now, some may not like the answer they receive, but at least you know where you stand and you can be strategic with that information.
Well, I also think a high school coach is going to, you know, look at the talent that they have on their roster and be able to see which player has, you know, potential to be able to play at the next level and which ones don't. So, you know, a PSA can go and ask their coach, you know, hey, I'm interested in playing at the collegiate level. But I think by the time that a player is in their junior and senior year, their high school coach already knows this, is already working on behalf of that particular player to help them get to the next level of playing in college. So I don't even know if you know this, but you actually are connected to both of my son's high school football coaches.
How so? That's crazy.
Yeah, when I was doing a little bit of research, I saw that you are connected to Dell Smith and Masai Halimarian.
Oh, okay. Now, those names don't ring a bell off the top of my head, but Dell. I think I do know Dell. Okay. And what was the other gentleman?
Masai Halimarian. They're both out of the Washington, D.C. area.
Okay, yeah, I do believe that I've talked a few times to Dale, but and you know, we come across so many coaches, I might have met Masai as well, but
yeah,
that's crazy. It's a small world.
It's a small world. No worries about that. I was just making a comment because both of them were actually really, really, really good coaches, high school football coaches. You know, Dale had my son in 11th grade and Masai had my son in the 12th grade. And Masai is over at St. Francis Academy in Baltimore, which is ranked in the top 10 in the nation. And at the time when Coach Dale was coaching my son in 11th grade, they were playing in the Washington Catholic Athletic Conference and doing extremely well there too. So both of them, I had really good experiences with helping my son get recruited to the next level. So I just thought that was interesting that you were connected to both of them. Coach T, there's the horn. It's halftime. There's a whole lot more I want to ask you. We definitely had to dive deep into some of the specifics of recruiting that you just shared. And of course, we had to talk about before you go pro. And in addition to other details of the recruiting process, like the importance of film and what it takes to be a walk-on and should an athlete redshirt their freshman year. So we're going to take a quick break and more with Coach Terrence Wood on Field Goals for the Focus Driven Athlete coming up on the other side in a few minutes.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion is a vital part of an organization's ecosystem. It is as important to an organization as air is to humans. If either is absent, the outcome will not be positive. Research shows that companies that value DEI are stronger and more profitable than those that don't. LMH Strategies understands that DEI is more than just a business solution. but a core set of principles that make up your organization's culture. LMH Strategies is a leadership, management, and humans systems consulting company that specializes in business transformation, program management, and federal and civilian partnerships. They understand that by implementing DEI in the workplace, you are implementing a proactive strategy. With over 25 years of experience working with partners in higher education, government, and business, LMH Strategies has a focus on change management, supplier diversity, and diversity, equity, and inclusion. Their professional team brings a wide range of national and global experiences in different industries that will help align your organization to meet and achieve its desired outcomes. They look at the whole company, aligning intention with perception to deliver measurable solutions. And that makes for an improved workplace, better businesses, and a brighter world. Industry, government, and higher education markets trust LMH Strategies as their business partner, and they welcome the opportunity to earn your trust too. For more information, go to lmhstrategies.com.
So I mentioned before the break, I want to get into some other specifics about the recruiting process. But before we do, I think it's always good for our listeners to get to know our guests and how they got into doing what they do best. You yourself played Division I football at the University of Colorado. You played defensive back there. What was the recruiting process like for you, and how did you land at Colorado?
So the recruiting process for me really picked up at the time that we've been talking about, that junior year after the fall season, things started to really pick up. I had received mail and different kind of nudges by coaches at camps and stuff before then, but things really started picking up once I hit my junior year, and coaches started coming by the high school and visiting and talking to us. And the first school to actually offer me was the University of Virginia. And then Colorado came shortly after. And I was recruited by a gentleman, he's in the media now, named Rick Neuheisel. And basically, Rick was a great players coach, and a lot of people wanted to play for Rick. And it was Colorado was a very attractive program at the time. So was offered an opportunity to go on a visit. I actually took the Virginia visit first, and then went to Colorado, had a trip scheduled to Arizona State, but got a little pressure from Colorado to make a decision and decided to pull the trigger and went to Boulder. So, born and raised in California, Bay Area, and took my talents, like LeBron would say, to Boulder, Colorado.
Well, no, Colorado was doing well. You guys were still riding the excitement from Cordell Stewart when he was quarterback there. And I'll never forget, I was in high school when he threw that Hail Mary pass. Can't remember the team who they played, but I just remember it was a big game. He threw that Hail Mary pass. Yeah, it was against Michigan. I was about to say that. Yeah, it was through that Hail Mary pass against Michigan and won that game. And then, you know, of course, the rest was history. He went on and played at the Pittsburgh Steelers. I know you briefly played football in the CFL in the Arena League. You come from a football family. Talk to us about that for a minute.
Yeah, so with my family, football's kind of the family business. You know, my grandfather is an NFL Hall of Famer. His name is Willie Wood, former Green Bay Packers free safety.
I didn't make the connection, but yeah.
Yeah, and okay. Was the first black quarterback, actually, in the Pac-8, now Pac-12, at USC, and then played for the great Vince Lombardi, the first two Super Bowls.
Wow.
My brother ended up playing a year over at Colorado State, and then I played at CU after that. Played in most of my professional career in the Arena Football League. They had a team in Green Bay, played in Austin, Texas, and then for Canada, went to Hamilton and ended up getting released for with a bum hammy. But no, it was a great run, and you know, now focus the time on teaching these young student athletes the journey so they don't have to go through as many trials as I did, you know, along the way.
So talk to us about Before You Go Pro and the inspiration behind starting that organization and what it is you guys actually do for amateur football players.
Yeah, Before You Go Pro was started, almost 15 years ago. After I was done playing, I coached in high school. And then after that, I knew I still wanted to bring some value and help young men, but it was just too hard to do it as a coach. And then also, I felt like there were so many great coaches on the field already, and that just the way the industry was going and all the different distractions that were facing these young men, I felt like there needed to be more coaches off the field. So that's when we created Before You Go Pro. Before You Go Pro is a mentoring and recruiting program for aspiring college football players that are playing at the high school and junior college prep school levels. The thing that makes our program is unique is that, well, for one, we're online based, so we can work with the young man anywhere. You know, it doesn't matter where that young man is located. We even have a offensive lineman in Denmark and a young man in Canada, but we can work with the young man anywhere. Basically, what we want to do is get him in position to receive college, athletic, or academic money. And then we don't leave our athletes. We actually stay with them. I look at them signing their scholarship as chapter one, you know, and I don't think that's the right time to leave somebody. So we stay with them until they hang up their cleats, whether that's after college or professionally. And our main mission is to help them transition successfully out of the game of football and make sure that they have some life success. So we really want to leverage football for more life opportunities. And that's what we do with Before You Go Pro. We evaluate all of the young men. Unfortunately, there are some we do have to turn away, but this is a relationship business, as I said, so we want to make sure we're not burning any bridges.
Yeah. Again, I wish I just knew about you guys back in 2015 when my son graduated from high school.
It would have made things a lot easier for us. About them too. You did just fine though, Glenn.
Yeah. So speaking of my son, you know, when he was starting to excel in football, I didn't know a lot about the recruiting process, and I didn't want to necessarily put all my eggs in one basket, like you said, with high school coaches, because let's be honest, you know, there are good high school coaches and there are some that are not so good. And just for out for themselves. I wanted to put him in the best situation to get recruited. And even though he was fine where he was, he and I both made the decision to leave public school and enroll into private school and into a school that was good academically, played competitively, and where the high school coaches had relationships with college coaches and recruiters. Now, I'm not saying one way is better than the other because everyone doesn't have that option to enroll their child into private school. I know you talked about that earlier, nor a family, you know, may not live in an area where a private school is accessible to them. And I know you went to a college prep school as well in the Bay Area. So what I'm saying is you always do what's best for your child that can put them in a position to be successful. And what I am asking is there more of a recruiting advantage for a prospective student athlete who play in a more competitive league, whether that be private or public school?
I think there are certain advantages, but there are some public schools, very particular public schools, that they have advantages as well and have a system. You know, really, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter private school or public. It's you have to look at that school individually and see if there's a pipeline. There's a school called Long Beach Poly in California. I think they may have the most guys that have ever played in the NFL. If they're not number one, they're definitely top three. So, you know, that's a public school in Long Beach, a little bit in the hood, you know, but they know the process. They do it year after year, you know, and they have more guys go than many private schools. So obviously they have somebody affiliated with that program or in that program that puts kids on a fast track to be recruited because it's tried and true. Now, there are private schools that have the same type of systems and environment to put kids on the fast track. Typically, more of your private schools will have those type of safe, you know, processes in place. But I don't want parents to think that it's private school or nothing. It's really something that you have to look at on an individual basis. And it shouldn't be too hard to get the information. You know, look over the past 4 years and see how much college talent that school is producing. And if it's a lot, then great. If it's none or little, then you want to start thinking about some strategies outside of the school.
Yeah, I agree. And speaking of that, of strategies, can attending a sports boarding school like an IMG Academy down in Florida increase the chances of competing in college?
I think it's very similar to the prep school question. Is, you know, IMG is ran like a college, and obviously there's so many college recruiters that are going to stop by schools like that. But what good is it to be at a school like that if you're not on the field? You know, at the end of the day, your grades and your film is going to be what gets your foot in the door. So if you're going to look at a school like an IMG, which is like a glorified, it's like a prep school, you know, a glorified almost academy, then you got to make sure that you're going to be able to hit the field. Because if you don't hit the field, then in a lot of those schools, Glenn, aren't cheap. You know, it's going to probably cost you a little money. So, you know, you could lose money and opportunity if you're not going to hit the field.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I want to rewind back to something that you touched on earlier in the recruiting process, and that's the importance of having a recruiting video. A recruiting video is, you know, one of the most important parts of a PSA's recruiting profile. So, you know, briefly talk to us about what kind of highlight footage should PSAs use in their football recruiting video, but most importantly, what do coaches not want to see in a recruiting video?
So as far as the PSAs building their video in an attractive manner, you definitely want to put some of your best plays at the very forefront. You figure a coach is going to watch, you know, maybe 3 or 4 plays and then make a decision. So you definitely want to put your best plays towards the front. And then once again, get an evaluation to make sure that those are indeed the best plays to put up there. You know, when it comes to position, you got to be mindful of the things that are home runs for your position. You know, if you're a skill guy, a running back, if you're a wide receiver, then explosion plays over 20 yards are big, plays that show speed. If you're a linebacker or a defensive lineman and you're showing that you can shed tackles, that you can be physical, those are great things. If you're a quarterback, you got a play that's really showing that you went through your progressions, your different reads. Those are things. So that's why I say you want to have somebody in your corner, and it may be your coach, it may be your dad, but you want to have somebody in your corner that knows what they're talking about, because then they can say, hey, man, you got this play number one, but really the play that was number 6 is the one that's going to grade out high with the recruiter. You know,
Because your recruiting video, I would think it's just like your resume. You want to put all your, you know, highlights, your major highlights that's going to get you hired, or in this case, recruited, you're going to put them all the way up front.
Yep.
To be noticeable. Exactly. You know? And then one other thing I would like to stress is too, is don't add music.
Yes. You know? Yes. Oh, some of the don'ts. Yeah. Don't add music. You know, you don't need all the graphics.
Right.
Stay away from that. You know, you want to have a little arrow or a circle where they know who you are. But, you know, I know now on Huddle, they can put all this verbiage and different graphic. You know, the coach doesn't want to see all that, you know, and the music, you know, they're not going to listen to it.
That's right. Right. It should be a turn off.
Have the volume off. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Social media has transformed the way college coaches are recruiting athletes. Coaches can now connect, evaluate, and gather information about a prospective student athlete without ever leaving the office. I know we set up a couple of social media accounts for my son when he was in high school. So just talk about how coaches, recruiters are using social media accounts to communicate and recruit prospective student athletes these days.
social media account is basically your mirror to the world. You know, it's for them to see who you want them to perceive you to be. And hopefully, you know, you're putting out who you really are, but it's your opportunity to market yourself. It's a grand opportunity for the ones who use it the right way. For the ones who don't, it can actually be your demise, you know, where you miss an opportunity. But it's a huge chance for you to show them who you want them to believe mm-hmm. you are. So mm-hmm. if you're going to be a student athlete, then the things that you post should be things that student athletes at a college level are posting. You know, you should be posting things about maybe you're going to class and show your grades. You should be posting things about your workouts and showing how you do your off-season workouts or the different camps that you're visiting or showcases that you're going to. So, you know, to keep it simple and safe, make sure that you are just posting the things that student athletes do. And then you can always look at great examples, even at the professional level. Look at some of the guys like a Russell Wilson, a Tom Brady, you know, and of course, you're not on their level, but you can do similar type posts that are going to put you in a good light and make a coach say, hey, this seems like a good young man to have on our campus.
Yeah, I agree. And in fact, I told my son, you're going to have two social media accounts. One is personal and the other one is going to be strictly for, you know, academics and athletics. And you want to make sure that whatever you do personally doesn't come back to haunt you, because we, you know, we've all heard the stories and I've seen, you know, that be a detriment to prospective student athletes that are trying to get to the next level when they tweet or retweet or, you know, Snapchat or Instagram something that is inappropriate. And even if they delete it, it can still come back to haunt them. So, you know, we want to keep it professional as much as possible. You know, when my son was getting recruited, I thought I was going to have to do all the talking and advocating, but I was wrong. And it was actually a rude awakening for me that that wasn't the case. Because, you know, as a parent, I wanted to be able to, you know, advocate and talk for my son, because I just didn't maybe trust everything that he was going to always say. So why is it that coaches and recruiters want to talk and hear from a prospective student athlete and not necessarily a family member?
Because they know that the family member is trying to sell, just like, you know, they're trying to sell their university. The family member is definitely going to try to sell that young man and is going to want to say everything right, you know, but they want the young man to be able to talk and think for himself. He's the one that's going to be on campus. He's the one that's going to be, you know, having to show up every day at school and come ready to go. So that's who they want to talk to. They want to talk to a certain extent, the school, the coaches, the employer, and the athlete is the employee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. We had Tiana Myers-Rich on our podcast. She was representing the NCAA, and, you know, she made it very clear that, you know, coaches will slide up in the DMs of, you know, the prospective student athlete. So, you know, it's a rude awakening, but it was one that I had to adjust to really quickly. And all I did was just prep my son on the things of what he should be talking about and things, you know, what he should not be saying.
Yeah.
So, you know, we know that grades are super important to land a football scholarship. You know, I've always made this analogy that grades are like credit. The better your grades, you know, the easier it's going to be for you to get recruited and play at the school of your choice. But the worse your grades, you know, you're not going to necessarily get recruited, or you're not going to get recruited to the school of your choice. We've all seen, you know, Last Chance U on Netflix. So for those student athletes that may have challenging grades, the recruitment process is harder, but it's not totally at a loss. So what steps can a prospective student athlete who doesn't meet the academic requirements take to get a football scholarship?
Well, the beautiful thing is that there's options, and all you want to be focused on is your individual journey. You know, so some young men need more film. Some young men might have messed up and done something socially. Some young men, you know, they need to fix their grades. So if grades is an issue, then you're probably going to end up going the junior college route, maybe a prep school if you have the grades to at least get into a prep school. But the bottom line is keep playing. As long as you keep playing and moving the chess piece forward, then you kind of learn your lesson. You can start getting your grades up, and then you can have the opportunity to live your dream and get the scholarship. But grades is huge. Once again, 2.3 is the minimum. And a lot of guys get in trouble early in high school, and then they try to dig themselves out, and it gets hard. So, you know, when we were coming out, it was 2.0, and then they raised it to 2.3. That really eliminated the time you have to play around. So if your grades are low, but let's say you have the athletic ability, but you just don't have the grades, then, you know, keep playing. Find a junior college that'll give you a shot, and then go from there.
You know, for those players that are not quite maturely ready academically and athletically, do you recommend reclassification or a gap year?
It just depends on the individual's situation. That's something that has always kind of been around. And it's something that was really used with COVID because so many kids got a bum deal as far as being able to play or get exposure because of COVID. So, you know, in my opinion, you should get some advice on mm-hmm. that, you know, mm-hmm. before you do it. But I think it could be a strategy that works.
Mm-hmm. I agree. What's the difference between a verbal offer and receiving an offer letter?
Well, you know, today's era is so different. When I was coming out, when you were coming out, it didn't matter. And basically an offer was an offer you could commit, and it was something that you can trust and take to the bank. Now they have uncommittable offers where it's kind of like they're trying to keep you on hold, where they're telling you you got an offer, but they're not accepting the commitment. Then you've got verbal offers, and then you've got offers that may come through the mail. What athletes and parents should realize is that nothing is official until you sign on the dotted line. You know, a national letter of intent is a contract. In most cases, it's a one-year contract, which means it has to be renewed each year. You go into the coach's office and you sign off on another year, or maybe they tell you get out of Dodge. But, you know, this is an opportunity for you to really be business-minded and just realize what you're getting into. Nothing is official till you sign on the dotted line. So whether it's an offer through the mail or a verbal offer, it's great because it shows promise. But until they send you a letter of intent, and there's a proper time for that, and until you sign it, they can go with somebody else and take the offer away, and you can choose another school. So nothing is official until that young man signs. And you may even want to ask the coach if you get an offer, is this a committable offer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you said it best. The most important piece of the recruitment process is actually signing the National Letter of Intent and landing a scholarship to play at the school of your choice. So before we wrap up, there is a lot of misconception of the scholarship offer. You know, is it a full 4-year scholarship? Is it a multi-year scholarship? Is it, you know, 4 1-year scholarships? So just enlighten us to what a scholarship offer is, and then also talk about the differences in, you know, red shirts and gray shirts, blue shirts, green shirts, eligibility and recruiting statuses.
That's a loaded one, but I'll start with, you know, as far as the scholarship, you also got to keep in mind there's different levels of college football. So if I'm a parent listening right now or a student athlete to this podcast, and I'm hearing that my young man has an offer to a D2 school, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a full ride. It could be a partial offer. It could have some academic money attached to it. So you really want to get clarification from any coaches or anybody that you're talking to exactly what that offer, that scholarship offer, is consisting of. Now, at the highest level, you know, the FBS schools, a lot of the FCS schools, Division I AA, but at the FBS schools, the schools that you see on big time TV, usually if they're offering a scholarship, it's a full ride offer. They have athletic money set aside where they can give a young man tuition. He's getting his room and board. You know, there's going to be meals, training table meals with the team. In many cases, if a young man stays there 4 or 5 years, I know they have the super seniors now where they've been there 6 years. You know, in some cases, that's well over a six-figure investment that the school is making in that athlete. And then, like I said, as you go down to the lower divisions, Division II, Division III, NAIA, then you get into some cases where an athlete might have a partial, you know. Part of it will be athletic, part of it will be academic, or, you know, the family may have to chip in a little bit to help out cover the costs. Now, as far as a red shirt is a young man who he's practicing with the team, but he's not currently playing in the games. And every athlete has 4 years of eligibility in college and to be on the field. And once you hit the field and you played a certain amount of games, then your eligibility clock starts ticking. So, you know, if a young man is redshirting, he may be in college. He may be a part of the team on the roster. He's playing, but he hasn't actually played in live games. So his eligibility clock, as far as on the field, hasn't started ticking. He'll practice with the team for a year, but he'll come back next year as a redshirt freshman. He'll be a sophomore academically, but he'll still have 4 years of eligibility on the field. And it's just a way that some coaches, I think in most cases, schools would love to redshirt their freshmen, all of them, just to get them more indoctrinated into the culture and build them up more. But sometimes they got to play these kids. You know, I think that in some cases it could be in the best interest of a kid to redshirt. In some cases, kids are ready to play and they should play.
I agree. Yeah, my son actually redshirted, and I think it was the best thing for him maturely too. Yeah. Yeah. And I ask that because, you know, when it comes to red shirts, gray shirts, blue shirts, and green shirts, that, you know, some of them still, you know, can receive an athletic scholarship. And I think gray shirt is the only one that they do not. But if you're red shirt, blue shirt, or green shirt, you're still eligible for athletic scholarship in the play on the team as well.
Yeah. The blue shirt term, I've been doing this a long time. I haven't had anybody that we've worked with have a blue shirt. Gray shirt, you know, it's a way for them almost to kind of hide a player. Where maybe he doesn't come into the program right away. Maybe they can bring him on in the spring. He may go to classes, attend classes, do some workouts and stuff, but that clock hasn't started ticking. Maybe his parents are even footing the bill, and then they bring him on in the spring. So it's kind of used as a way to kind of hold a young man while you're waiting for the roster to open up. But the most common ones that you're going to hear is, you know, someone that's like a true freshman, true sophomore, true junior, senior playing, or a red shirt, meaning that they sat out a year and just practiced.
Got it. Lots of good information here today, Terrence. Really appreciate it. I want to give you an opportunity to promote yourself because some of our listeners may have some follow-up questions for you or may be interested in retaining before you go pro. I know you're on YouTube and all the social media platforms. So just tell our audience, how can our listeners get in contact with you?
Yeah, no, I appreciate the opportunity, Glenn. And once again, Coach Terrence Wood, and you can check us out at www.beforeyougopro, just like it sounds, all spelled out, beforeyougopro.com. We're on all the social media channels, the main ones, your Twitter, your Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and everything is at Before You Go Pro. So yes, please reach out. If you do need help recruiting, if you just have questions, we'd love to help out. We also do, you know, free consultation calls. And then once again, we're a lot more than just recruiting. There's a mentoring and fraternity component to before you go pro. That's going to be beneficial as well. So please check us out, www.beforeyougopro.com.
And might I add that you also have a book with the same name. So all that information can be found out in your book as well.
Yep. It's basically, it's a story, but there's a lot of teaching lessons that are good for the athletes and the parents. It really teaches you the business. And once again, like you said, it's also entitled Before You Go Pro. And all of our athletes receive that and access to our membership site when they join.
Nice, nice. So Terrence, look, we've come up on the most anticipated part of our show. We're going to put you in the hot seat for a minute. So before we leave it all on the field, we like to play a game with all of our guests by asking them to participate in some quick hitters. We'll ask a series of questions and you give us the first thing that comes to your mind. So this is our holiday edition because at the taping of the show, Christmas is not here yet. But when this show will be released, Christmas would have passed. So we're going to mix it up a little differently than what we normally do. And we're really going to put your quick thinking skills to the test. So here's the catch. It's a running clock with 3 minutes left, and Colorado is up by 6 over Colorado State, because I know that's one of your division, or used to be one of your division rivalries, right?
Yeah.
Which is funny because you said that's where your brother went. And just real quick story, you know, Marshall actually played Colorado State. That was in the New Mexico Bowl. That was my son's first bowl game, and Marshall won.
That was actually as crazy as it sounds. I think my brother was at that bowl. Yep. That was his first bowl, too.
And my son got defensive MVP that game.
Wow. So, there's some. Brother was redshirting. But, yeah, there's some synergy there. Because I do, if my memory serves me correctly, that was my brother's first bowl game, too. He's a true freshman.
Wow. All right. So I need you to mentally shift back into your playing days at Colorado and put your game face on, because your answers will determine who wins the game. So you ready?
Yes.
All right. Here we go. Question number one. During Christmas, which do you love more, giving gifts or receiving gifts?
Giving gifts.
All right. Question number two. Are you an early shopper or a last minute shopper?
Last minute shopper.
Me too. Got to still get mine out.
Gotta be honest.
Yes. Question number three. It's not officially Christmas until I hear A, Christmas in Hollis by Run DMC, B, Silent Night by The Temptations, or C, This Christmas by Donny Hathaway?
Silent Night by The Temptations.
I agree. Question number four. Favorite childhood Christmas cartoon, Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown, or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I'm going to go with Rudolph.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Charlie Brown. That was my favorite.
Almost did.
All right. Number five. What does a focus-driven athlete mean to you?
A focus-driven athlete is someone who never loses sight of the mission and always knows how to find support to get what they want.
All right, good answer. Question number six, best song to get you hyped before the start of a game?
Probably Tupac, All Eyes on Me.
I hear that. All right, question number seven, top five amateur athletes you've personally worked with?
Ooh, I would say there's a young man named Gino Campiotti. He's an All-American junior college player right now. I started with him when he was an amateur, but now he's practice squad. Young man named Rogesterman Ferris out of Florida. There is a young man that currently just signed to San Diego State named Hassan Mahassan, who is legit. A young man out of Florida, the younger brother of Rogesterman Ferris. Clemson just called him yesterday. A young man named Isaiah Ferris, cornerback out of Florida, Cardinal Gibbons High School. And then I would say we have a wide receiver right now at San Jose State named Elijah Cooks.
Nice,
Who's probably going to get drafted.
Oh, wonderful. Question number eight. If you could relive one moment of your playing years, what would it be?
One moment of my playing years, I would probably go back to my senior day in college. It was probably the most memorable moment of my football career, where we beat Nebraska 62-36 on my senior day. We hadn't beat them in about 6 or 7 years, and because we won that game and we were able to do it. So that would probably be the moment I'd go back to.
Nice. Question number 9. Who do you think is the most competitive? A high school athlete trying to play in college, a college athlete who's hungry to get to the next level, or an already established professional athlete?
I would say the college player trying to get to the next level, because he's right in the middle. I think the high school player is hungry, but might not fully know what that grind looks like or what it takes. And then I think the pro player could get a little complacent, and the college player is right in the middle, where they know a little bit of what it will take, but then also they know that they gotta put in that work.
All right. Good answer. Yeah, I agree. Final question. What topic would you like to see us discuss on Field Goals for the Focus Driven Athlete? And who would you recommend for us to interview that can speak to that topic? But before you answer, your job is to help bring this person or persons onto the show.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good one right there. I think one person that would be good for the show would probably be Evan Brennan, who's a friend of mine and an NFL agent. And he might be able to lend some good insight to, you know, what agents look at and some of the things that that go through, you know, when they're looking at players and some of the with the GMs and scouts that everybody look at.
Yeah, definitely need that one. Definitely looking for that one in 2022. All right, Terrence, there's the buzzer. And that means we've reached the end of our show and it's time to get off the field. Terrence, my man. I'm so glad we were able to make this happen. This has been a long time coming. So thank you for spending this time with me.
Yeah, no, I definitely appreciate it and had a ball and really hope that we can bring some value to some people. And,
absolutely.
Anything you need, you know, keep me posted. And once it's ready to go, we'll make sure we get it out too.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That was going to ask you, man, to make sure you get it to your family, friends, and colleagues. And, get them to subscribe to our podcast. So do you feel like you left it all on the field today?
Oh, yeah, man. We left it all on the field today.
Awesome. Awesome. Good deal. So just a quick reminder to our listeners, we'll be releasing our shows every other Thursday. So we look forward to seeing you again on the field in 2. We're also on Twitter. So be sure to follow our Twitter handle at MyFieldGoals. We're also on Apple Podcasts and Google Pods. So make sure to like our show, subscribe, and leave a review. Terrence, that's a wrap. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you and your family.
All right, Glenn. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you and your listeners and your beautiful family, too.
You've been listening to Field Goals for the Focus Driven Athlete. Stay connected with us by liking our Facebook page, Field Goals. You can also join the discussion on our Facebook group page, Field Goals for the Focused Driven Athlete. Also follow us on Instagram at MyFieldGoals. And be sure to head over to our website at www.myfieldgoals.com to subscribe, rate, and leave a review of our show. You can find us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, and all other podcast hosting platforms. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to having you join us again soon on The Field.